Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Oh, nice to say that. Tim Ryder, Taryn Sharma, Simply Amazing Podcast. Oh, a little hiatus, I guess, between life and I guess burnout from doing this stuff, burnout from the Mets. It's nice to take a break. Taryn, what's up, buddy? Welcome back to the party. What's going on?
Yeah, dude, the hope is back. So, you know, it's good. We can talk about things with a fresh start, be able to look forward and a lot to be excited about what's to come.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a while. So to do a very, very brief rundown, the Mets have a president of baseball operations in David Stearns. They've been chasing him for a couple of years now. They finally got their man. In a greater sense, the Mets finally got a president of baseball operations, and they've been chasing that down for quite some time. I think that's going to have real ripple effects throughout the organization as far as stability, as far as one, you know, unified goal. What are your thoughts on what this means for moving the organization forward as far as not beyond just, you know, the Cohens' involvement and the influx of capital?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the Mets kind of have their guys now. This is something that they were hoping to do the entire time that Cohen has owned the team. And so they have a president of baseball operations, which is something that they wanted. And it's somebody that comes highly regarded, but I'm also incredibly interested with what's going on the business side. You know, this, as much as Cohen is funding this entire endeavor, at a certain point, it does need to make money. And so a lot of the redevelopment that they propose to do around the ballpark is something that I think a lot of us fans would like to see, is not have chop shops, but be able to spend time around the ballpark and have it be a real destination. I think that that's going to come back to the Mets in a big way. So I'm excited. And they hired a president of business operations. So Cohen doesn't necessarily have to be the one handling all of these things. And so I think that the Mets are in a great spot. You know, the optimistic podcast, as always, is optimistic.
Well, I think you put it really well. The hope is back. And this, you know, this comes around every winter, but I guess especially since the Cohens bought the team, you know, there's just a different vibe to all of this. It's not, oh God, what could possibly go wrong? It's genuine hope and almost a belief that, yeah, things are going to get better. And did they step on a few rakes last year? Sure. Yeah. And you know, I don't think anyone's moves are going to be infallible, whether you're running the Mets, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Cardinals, it doesn't matter. There's always going to be missteps. And last year, the Mets made an honest push and made some missteps. But I think, you know, between all the trades and recouping expenses and setting themselves up for the future in the, you know, the Scherzer and the Verlander trades, however you want to lean into all those things, you know, they are, I don't want to say in a more competitive spot, because that's tough to say, especially in this division, but they're in a really, really decent spot to skip over what could have been in the past for this organization under previous ownership, what could have been a prolonged stretch of infutility. I think that, you know, the fact that they got out of most of their financial commitments scot-free last year, the mistakes they made, they, you know, organizationally have wiped the slate clean and are looking forward on a full wide scope, just looking ahead. Again, I think it's all just a brand new paint job for this organization. And I think the fan base kind of, we're reacting well to it. There's always going to be that, you know, antsiness on social media. Everyone's waiting for the next foot to drop, waiting for moves to come. But, you know, especially considering what this team did last year, as far as missteps and maybe misspending money and leaving holes on the roster. And, you know, we're not going to look back and go over cracked eggs. We're just going to eat that omelet and keep it moving. But it's where they are now. I just feel they're in a much better place, and that hope and that belief that things are turning around, it's you know, from a fan's perspective, it's palpable.
Yeah, and I don't think that they were mistakes at the time, those contracts. It just, they, you know, they didn't turn out the way that you hope. All of this is just projections, right? These are human beings, and they've got to go out there and perform. And if you're not going to end up getting that performance, then yeah, it's going to be a real drag on the roster. This team, despite Cohen funding it the way that he has, it doesn't have infinite money. There's caps on resources that the Mets have to abide by as well. And so if you have Starling Marte making a significant amount of money and he's not going to be performing at the level that he did last year pre-injury, that's going to make it really tough to compete, especially when for years, really, the Mets did not do a great job developing their farm. And now I think that there's been a redoubling of efforts to do that. I think that there's going to be a big push in player development, which is huge. But cutting bait with Scherzer and with Verlander, even Mark Canna, that is emblematic, I think, of Cohen's the way that he ended up making all of this money.
You pull the shoot at the right time.
Yeah, and you make decisions constantly based on new information. And so you got new information. These, you know, I don't love it when people refer to the athletes as assets, but in a way they are assets to the organization. So thinking of them that way, when the assets are underperforming, they made a decision to get out from under these distressed assets. And that's the way that Cohen made all of this money to begin with. And I think that that's the way that they got out from under these contracts, these decisions based on the new information. And I think Epler deserves a ton of credit. Obviously he was armed with a war chest to be able to pay down these contracts and buy better prospects, but identifying those players who seem to be pretty solid based on what they've gotten so far. I know Justin Jackson was left unprotected with Rule 5, so maybe he won't be in the organization, but the remaining pieces.
In the end, you might lose Dominic Leone. I mean, keeping Jackson would have been great, but if he doesn't work out, I mean, all you lost was Dom Leone, so I guess it's not so bad.
Right. And so I think that they did what they had to do, and now you get this breath of fresh air, somebody who like Cohen, grew up a diehard Mets fan, is passionate about it, and went out and became successful elsewhere, and now is deciding to use those resources to try to chase a championship for their childhood team. And so I think that that's one thing that's really exciting about Stearns, is that he's like us. And I think it's also emblematic of the difference or how far the organization has come, in that Omar Minaya really banged the table to get Stearns a full-time offer. And the Wilpons did not abide. So he left after his internship. And so this is somebody that you could have had in the organization all along. Instead, he's back. And now we'll see how he gets to work, because his teams in Milwaukee, they were competitive, but as everyone knows, kind of hamstrung financially. And so seeing how he will be smart with this new budget, I think everyone thinks of like the Andrew Friedman kind of blueprint. And that's what I'm hoping to see as well.
Yeah. And I think you kind of hit it on the head, in the sense that, you know, everything kind of happens for a reason. And, you know, at the time, if Stearns would have been welcomed into the organization after his internship so many years ago, you almost feel like his talents would have been wasted, because not wasted, I think, you know, the cream still have rose to the top. It just, he wouldn't have been on the trajectory that he's on. He wouldn't have landed in the situation he's landing in now, where this is, like you said, it's almost that ideal situation where he made his bones building competitive ball clubs with limited resources. Now he's going into a situation with not unlimited resources, but like you said earlier, a nice healthy war chest of not just capital, but staff and resources, information and analytically, you know, sensed resources that, you know, coming into this situation, I think it's almost a perfect storm. The Mets are in a spot where, yes, they are, I think Ken Rosenthal with foul territory on Tuesday had a little video and a report come out. I don't know if it was foul territory or there at the Athletic, but it came from Ken Rosenthal. You know, the Mets are a little, they're in the red. You know, they're paying a bunch of luxury tax this season after what they went through last year. And I'm with you 100% on Epler. You know, I think in time, especially if some of these young prospects work out, striking while the iron was hot, and whether it was with the green light from Cohen to go ahead and eat some money, or whether it was Epler really going and doing probably some of the best GM work he's ever done in any position he's had, you know, it put the Mets in a really, really nice spot. Now, you know, moving forward, you have Stearns, who's clearly, you know, motivated and very well supported. You now have his staff filling out. As you said, I don't have the gentleman's name in front of me, but the business operations side, former Bloomberg CEO. Again, a lot going on organizationally off the field. Queens Baseball Club, whatever the legal name is. They've already wiped out all of the auto body shops just to the other side of Roosevelt. 126th. That's all going to be new developments. They have the soccer plans. If you know, I believe that they've already released some sketches of ideas and what they're going to do there. Of course, Cohen's really pushing for a casino on site, which there's going to be people in favor, people against it. Not a conversation today, but working on a guest that we can have that conversation one day. Mm-hmm. One day soon, I think. But yeah, there's a lot going on with the Mets right now. And, you know, I think for brevity's sake, we'll keep it focused on the field for today. And even more specifically, I think we're going to focus on one area of the roster that really needs to be tackled this offseason. But, you know, overall, between Stearns coming in and the business side getting built up and, you know, player development continuing to build and kind of pivot and grow. And, you know, Mendoza's in now. John Gibbons is your bench coach. So you have a new school and an old school kind of flavor running that clubhouse. Again, everything's kind of fallen into place. The hot stove has started slow, but that doesn't mean there's not plenty of options out there from the high end down to just filling spots. I think we're going to stick on starting pitching for today. I mean, where do we begin?
Let's talk about the guys that are off the market now.
Yes, that's a very good place to start, because that sets the rest of the dominoes up to fall.
Yeah, so I think the two biggest signings probably at this point are Sonny Gray, who just agreed to a deal with St. Louis Cardinals, 3 years and $75 million, I believe. I got to see Sonny pitch quite a bit this year in Minnesota, and he's a dog. He's somebody that really wants the ball. Is he going to end up giving you $25 million worth of production every year? Maybe not. Last year was really great, but I think he gave up like one home run basically for a lot of the year, and then got tagged with multiple home runs in the divisional series and a really important game here against the Astros, who are a great team, obviously. So that's one name that is off the board. Do you like that contract for Sonny Gray? Is that something that you were hoping that the Mets were going to pursue?
I couldn't foresee him coming here. And I don't necessarily buy into the Sonny Gray's not cut out for New York thing. I think that's a conversation that, or at least a discussion that was held privately between him and his camp. I don't buy into the, oh, well, he stunk for the Yankees. When he was at the Yankees, one, I was I don't want to say heavily invested, but I was rooting for Sonny Gray when he came to New York. I'm a Sonny Gray fan. When he came on the scene with Oakland, it was like, wow, this kid's got, like you said before, he's a dog, man. He's got that bulldog in him. And it showed. I think he went up against Verlander in a ALDS series, and he was just awesome. But anyway, when he came to the Yankees, they tried to mess with his pitch selection. They tried to mess with his repertoire. They wanted to change his slider. And I guess it was just in like the very primitive stages of pitch shape and pitch design. And they we're going to move you to, I think they, I want to say they went from like a sinking two seamer type deal to a strict slider, and it messed them all up. And you know, maybe coming to New York was an issue for him. But yeah, I never really saw him in the Mets connected. That being said, I'm a big Sonny Gray fan. Everything you said about him, I agree 100%. He's going to give you innings. He's going to give you leadership. He's going to go out there and he wants outs. He wants outs as bad as anybody on the diamond. And that's just a guy that you kind of have to tip your cap to. And he looks genuinely happy to go to St. Louis. I saw his little, I don't know if this was a full quote or just caught on video when he was getting ready for his presser, but he looked at his Cardinals number 54 jersey and he kind of said to himself, he's like, check it out. It's Bob Gibson, but mirrored. Oh, I thought that was cool. So cool. Like, you know, it's the history behind any, you know, just Major League Baseball. You're in a very, very exclusive club, but you know, you're looking at that at a St. Louis Cardinals jersey, which that might be one of the coolest uniforms in sports.
Absolutely. And, birds on the bat. Yep.
Oh, birds on the bat, man. It's just the coolest. But yeah, I mean, money wise, well deserved. I think he's going to be a solid two in that rotation for at least a year or two. And maybe they shift him into a three if he's, you know, if age is catching up with him. But his repertoire and what he brings to the table, I don't see much of a fall off. I think it's going to be a good deal for everybody. I want him to be that $25 million guy and, you know, stay in the upper crust of the league. Just because I'm a Sonny Gray fan, but you know, I guess we'll see how that cookie crumbles. I think the Kent Maeda deal, who another guy was with Minnesota. I'm sure you got a great look at him. Yeah. Now in Detroit, 2 years front loaded. He got $14 million next year, $10 million in 25. Here's a guy who had a little bit of trouble staying healthy, but you know, when he found his groove, he was really that guy again, right?
Yeah, he came back from Tommy John this year and worked really hard to do it. Probably would have been ready last year, late in the year, if they wanted to do it then, but really took the full amount of time, a year plus. I think he was out for 16 months or 18 months between his surgery and then pitching again. But, you know, during the COVID season, runner up for the Cy Young. This is a guy that has had a lot of success. Was used extensively in a bullpen role by the Dodgers. And then the Twins gave him an opportunity to start. He seems like a great clubhouse guy. His celebrations this year were awesome. He was a madman. And yeah, I think he's definitely aging. And it's nice for him to get another contract. It's crazy to think about it now, but when he came over from Japan, he signed an 8-year $25 million contract with the Dodgers. So he's really been underpaid most of this time. And so for him to get this 2-year $24 million, even if it's incentive laden, is awesome. I'm happy that he's getting another payday.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's going to be good for Detroit. I think they have a nice foundation growing there. I think they have a nice culture growing there. you know, maybe Baez was not the best signing to pull things together, but I think the growth is, you know, it's noticeable, at least outside looking in. And just got to hope that, you know, these young players who, I don't want to say highly touted, but, you know, guys like Torkelson, who could certainly turn into a very good player, nice pitching staff, Scooble, Mize, Matt Manning, who could be a very, very nice pitcher. I mean, you know, there's a nice foundation there. And hopefully he'll lead that group into, you know, being a major league rotation. And even if it's just for a couple of years, that sort of veteran leadership hopefully will translate or at least trickle down to the rest of a very, very young rotation. So we're looking at the money here. Of course, Maeda, I think that was, pardon the wording, right on the money, but it was. I mean, you know, you're going to give him $14 million this year, $10 million next year, and I'm sure if he pitches well, he could probably parlay that into another one-year deal if he's still willing to go that far. Sonny Gray, 34 going into his age 35 season, got $25 million a year to be, pretty much a two, maybe a three, 2-3 type guy. We'll see how it kind of pans out. But I don't want to shift gears too hard, but looking at what guys are getting now price-wise, putting Shohei Ohtani aside for a second, if you're looking at starting pitching, I think the unquestioned gem of the offseason is going to be Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
Mm-hmm.
And, if Sonny Gray's getting $25 million a year, you look at Yamamoto and what he brings to the table and his age, he's only 25 years old. And, over his last 94 starts, which is since the start of 2020 in the Japan Pacific League, he's got a 1.56 ERA, 0.89 whip, and he's allowed 22 home runs, 736 strikeouts over 684 innings. If Sonny Gray is getting $25 million over three, I think that these early projections of Yamamoto hitting 7-200 might actually be low. Whether it's the Mets, whether it's just someone who wants to get Yamamoto in, and that would be, with just cause. Do you see things getting out of hand? I mean, I've been watching highlight videos for the past week or so, and I am smitten. You don't see guys who can locate mid to high 90s fastballs wherever, and it comes out of their hand like a freaking cannon. That's a heavy, heavy fastball. He puts it wherever he wants it. A splitter that bites, a curveball that is so well developed and tunnels so well with his fastball and splitter. I think this guy could be next level. I know the Mets are, I don't want to say shying away, because we don't know if they're shying away from spending money, but you have to assume, unless they're going for something real big, they're probably not pedal to the metal like they were last offseason. If things get crazy, Yamamoto's up near 250 over eight, 240 over eight. Let's, pencil that in. Do you see them being in that mix just to get a talent of Yamamoto's ilk?
Yeah, I do, because I think that they need to bring in high level starting pitching. You basically traded your two aces last year, and I know that they'll have Senga locked in this year. We know that he was great last year, but otherwise, the only names I've really seen are that they're interested in Jordan Montgomery as well. So. I think that they will need to make a bigger signing, somebody to really anchor the rotation with Senga. And I think Yamamoto is a great fit. MLB Trade Rumors has the projected contract at 9 years for 225. So
9-225. See, I think he gets lower years and higher AAV. I honestly do.
Yeah, like 5-185.
Oh, I'm thinking 8-240. 30 a year for 8 years.
Yeah.
I think he's honestly, I mean, and again, I might just be buying into the hype, but watching his stuff, watching his demeanor, watching his poise, watching that freaking fastball, dude, the thing just barrels. It's like a bowling ball. He's disgusting. And I think, I don't want to pull a quote because I think someone actually used that. It was like an anonymous player. And he said, and I quote, he's disgusting. disgusting, but he really is, man. I would open up the checkbook for him. I really would.
I wouldn't ask him. Right? Like, if this guy were, if he had pitched stateside since he was 19 and was entering free agency going into his age 25 season like he is here, I don't think there would be any question about that amount of money. You know, this is a guy that, despite his kind of, he's like a smaller slider guy, he projects to be a stud that you can plug in at the top of your rotation. So I think he's would be a great fit for the Mets, and I hope that they are into it. I think that I've seen that the Giants are mentioned as a possible suitor.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, but there is that connection with Senga, so I hope that that he's doing some good recruiting and that he'll bring us Yamamoto this winter.
Oh my goodness, I don't get too wrapped up in what might happen, and that's baseball, that's in general, but man, I've fallen down the rabbit hole. I am just absolutely smitten with Yamamoto. We've been hearing some trade talk floating around. I believe John Morosi had Shane Bieber and Tyler Glasnow being linked to, I believe the Cubs and the Reds had their hats in the mix. Some other teams unnamed. Dylan Cease, we've heard his name thrown around. I believe the Braves were in that mix. I believe the Dodgers were in that mix. We've seen the Mets under previous regimes, not, you know, general manager wise, shy away from moving prospects. Do you see them going towards a trade if a Glasnow is still on the board and seems reasonable price wise? I mean, he's set to make $25 million, I believe, this year. Injury history is well documented. Peaks are ridiculous. He's a Cy Young level guy when he's right, but you know, you could say the same thing about Cease. When he's right, he is one of the best pitchers in baseball. Well, one of the best four seams in baseball, I should say, as long as his stuff works with it. I mean, the Mets can go in so many different routes. They can go these trade routes and pay in trade capital and go that way. They can go, okay, well, let's make a real push at Yamamoto. Let's, knock on wood, make a real push at Ohtani, which, you know, that's just a pipe dream in my mind. If they can really, really get him in here and pitch him, awesome. But, you know, I think he's just going to choose where he wants to go, and he's going to go where he wants to go. I'm actually more interested in looking at the crop of free agent starting pitchers that are out there right now. Like, I want to see what Jack Flaherty might look like on if he's willing to accept a minor league deal. Is he injured? No, he's just finished out really weak in Baltimore, right? Did he even get hurt? Did he? Yeah.
I was surprised that they weren't able to get more out of him. When he got traded there, I was like, oh, like the Orioles are going to fix him and ride him through October. And it just didn't happen.
It didn't. I'd want to see what Vince Velasquez might look like in with a minor league deal attached to him, even a little bit of commitment to him. I'd love to see what a guy like, I don't know, James Caprillion, who very, very high pedigree guy coming into the league, hasn't really figured it out yet, but, you know, someone who can certainly figure it out. You almost know that it's there, that someone just got to kind of unlock it. And, you know, keeping Hefner around, filling out the analytics department, filling out the R&D department, I think it's going to give this team a lot more upside to going and trying to find a, you know, I'm looking through the list, like, you know, shoot, Chris Vallemont, I believe he was a Twins farmhand. I'm not sure where he's coming from now, but, you know, these are guys who all had some sort of pedigree to them, some sort of buzz to them, who, you know, you find them in the right spot, you get something to work right for them, and you might get a lot. Like, you know, this isn't the Mets of old where you're looking at, oh, you know, we got to go bargain hunting, and we got, but it's still, I think the same tenet should still apply where you're trying to get the most out of a roster. And if, you know, if you got to pop around and say, hey, you know what, let's see what Braylon Marquez can do. Let's see what, let's see what Shota. I hope I don't butcher his name. Shota Imanaga. I know nothing about him. I watched a little bit of video today.
Lefty.
Dude, he's like a crafty dude.
Yeah, lefty. Just recently posted. He was really good for the Bay Stars, and he's only
former MLB pitcher was last year, right?
What?
That's where that former MLB pitcher was last year.
Yeah,
that. Yeah, one. Yeah, yeah. where was Eric Fetty? Was Eric Fetty there also?
I'm not sure.
He might have been in Korea, but he had like an unbelievable year.
He was with the Dinos in
all right,
KBO. But yeah, I mean, the idea of like three Japanese aces too is really, really cool. And I think that really gives the Mets a great opportunity to expand even further into that market. I mean, there was a ton of publicity for Kodai Senga last year, and I think that could even be greater this year. Yeah. Including maybe, you know, playing a game over there, playing a series over there. I always love when they do stuff like that. So, yeah, he's a guy that I would love.
5 a.m. baseball, sign me up. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Any interest in taking a flyer? Well, it would be more than a flyer, most likely, but Lucas Giolito.
Yeah, I mean, we were fine with them doing that at waivers last year, but yeah, I have no problem with that. I still think that he's young enough that maybe you can fix him. But I think it's a good point that you're making. Not every signing has to be the big flashy signing. It's nice to have at least like one of those a winter, I think. But you don't necessarily need that. Think about how important turning Jake Arrieta into like Cy Young level was for those Cubs. You know, they made the one signing with Lester, but otherwise really developed the rest of that rotation that did bring them a championship and another two NLCS appearances. So I think that it's doable. I think that it's really important to have the player development system to do it. I would probably shy away from Glasnow. I know that he's excellent, but he just doesn't throw a ton of innings. Not that you need to go out there and throw 200 plus every year, but I think that he has like a pretty significant injury history, and it would only be for 1 year that you would have him, right? And $25 million for this year. And who knows if he's going to be able to stay healthy beyond that. Who knows if he would be here.
I'm trading on hope, I'm trading for Juan Soto, but that's for another episode.
Right. And so I worry about that for Glasnow and for Bieber. Bieber's a guy who's been on the other side of it, where he has thrown a good number of innings, but last year was really broken down and wasn't able to be there for the Guardians. So I would probably shy away from both of those guys, but especially because they're going to cost a significant amount of capital. I don't think that you're going to get some big discount. So
I'm going to be able to work something out, like especially Glasnow, where the injuries has been a hindrance for him, but yeah, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
That sort of buzz, at least.
So what domino do you think is going to fall that is going to really kick things off? Because I thought when Nola signed that then we were going to see a bunch more movement. Do you think that everything is waiting on these trades to be made?
No, I actually think that I think Ohtani's probably going to be later in the winter. I think Yamamoto goes soon, and I think that kind of sets the market. I think that he's unlike anything else that we're going to see on the market this year. And of course, Ohtani's a very special case as well. But yeah, I think it's going to be Yamamoto, and everything else will kind of fall into place. And some teams are going to be scared off by where this might go, I think, price wise, as far as where the market might go. But
especially with the issues with TV money.
Yeah. They're going to get it, man. MLB Advanced Media, whatever it is now, that's still paying out. I think they're going to be fine. We're running out of time. I want to talk about the Queens Baseball Convention. This Saturday, it's at the Sheraton Four Points in Flushing, same spot as last fall. Mark Healy was kind enough to invite me back to the State of the Mets panel. Doors open at 10 a.m. I believe we're first, 10:30 a.m. You got Billy Wagner showing up, Cliff Floyd, Terry Collins. Our boy John Sapanaro is doing a panel. Our friend Lori Rubenson is doing a panel. John Franco signing autographs. Come on down, tickets at the door. Taryn, we're going to be back next week, I assume. And I'm hoping to get some audio clips and everything. I'm thinking we're going to have a real nice show next week.
Yeah, I'm hoping to. We'll definitely keep trying to do this more regularly. But glad to be back with you today, Tim.
Same here, man. Awesome. Awesome. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Let's fucking go Mutts. Go Mutts. Go Mets, as always. And we'll see you guys next time. Peace.